Right now, it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us every Monday morning. We rebroadcast Arthur on the weekends also. You can find him at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. And if he's not there, boy, do I hear from his fans. Good morning, Arthur.
I'm here.
They really get upset when you're not there.
Well, you know, maybe they think something is wrong.
Well, it's
since
that.
I'm here, I think I've missed in, I don't know how many years it is. Could I be 14 years on
Robinhood Radio? At least 12 or 13, you're right. It's probably
I think it's more like 14. Anyway, I think I've missed 3 days.
I know, but they get concerned because they've known you from your previous radio stints and stuff like that. So you've been with them.
What used to be WOR.
Yeah, but they, so you've been with them.
It's now in different stations than I worked at.
Yeah, but they've been with you your whole life, and so
I know that's my whole adult life.
I know,
and now I'm an old man. That's a long time.
That's right.
So, speaking of being an old man, when you get old, things start going wrong with your body. And I understand from those of my friends who are on blood thinners that they're not supposed to eat dark leafy greens. So I mention this because Bob, my husband, we're now using this word, is on a blood thinner now. And my nephew, who's a cardiac anesthesiologist and keeps up with everything, I must say I'm very proud of him for keeping up with everything, and he says that there are blood thinners now that don't are not affected by a high vitamin K, which is in fact itself a thinner. Or is it a clotter? I don't remember now. In any case, I do have friends who've been on thinners for a long time, and the old thinners, you could not eat dark leafy greens. So my friend, for instance, only eats iceberg lettuce salads unless she has fair warning, and then she doesn't take her blood thinner that day, and she can eat romaine. So... that's hardly a dark leafy green. But anyway, spinach is a dark leafy green, and it is high in vitamin K, which is the culprit with these blood thinners. So if you were on a blood thinner, then I think you should ask your doctor, is the one that you're on sensitive to increased vitamin K? So that's another reason not to eat kale.
That's a good reason.
I mean, if you need another reason. I like kale well enough when it's cooked. I don't buy into this salad with kale thing, which is hard to avoid when you live in Brooklyn. But spinach, I like spinach salad. And what is encouraging me to cook spinach, besides that it's there in the farmer's market. In fact, I remember a time living in the northwest corner when the only available local green, unless you wanted to pick dandelions, and chicory from your lawn, which I did used to do, and chickweed I used to do, is spinach. And then well into July, there would be nothing available except spinach. But spinach likes cool weather. So the spinach season in the northwest corner should last a little bit longer than it does down here, where it's already getting warm. I think today it's supposed to be close to 80 in New York City. And the spinach is not necessarily grown in the city, although we do have urban farming now, but it's mostly coming from New Jersey, where it's getting warm, too. So, anyway, this is the moment for spinach, before it gets hot. Because when it gets hot, spinach doesn't grow. It'll come back again when the weather gets cool in September, and then usually you can buy great spinach well into October. But now is, to me, the moment. And in fact, I think it's given to us in the spring because it is so tonic. I think we enjoy spinach more because our body needs spinach and dark leafy greens more in the spring than in other times of the year. Now, the only problem with spinach is cleaning it. It's not a problem, but it's a chore. And I know they sell pre-washed spinach in the supermarket in boxes, and it's just a leaf with no stems, And I guess if you're making spinach salad or adding it to a salad, that's a good spinach to use. But if you're cooking spinach, I don't find that that spinach has the flavor, the great spinach flavor that the crinkly kind of spinach has. Now, I bought on Saturday at my farmer's market two enormous bags of spinach for $6. And I don't know, I mean, it would have been, I don't know what it would be equivalent to in the supermarket, but I'm sure I would have paid double that, because there's so much spinach around at this time of the year that the farmers are almost ready to give it away. So I bought these two enormous bags of spinach, and I cleaned them. And what is that, that involves is first taking the leaves off the stems, because a lot of the stems are heavy. If they're not heavy stems, the stems are fine, but I don't like chewing into those heavy stems. And so the way I do it is I like make a zipper. I fold the leaf in half so that the stem side of the leaf is up, and holding the leaf with thumb and forefinger, I zip up the stem so that it comes right out of the leaf. If it doesn't all come out of the leaf, that's okay too, because the vein that's in the leaf is very tender. So that's, and I do that, and I put all these leaves, without the stems, in a my biggest pot of cold water. And I rustle them around in the water, and then I let it stand for a few minutes to give the sand that is undoubtedly clinging to all those leaves a chance to settle to the bottom of the pot. Then I, with my hand, using it like a claw, I lift off the leaves from the surface of the water, and I put them in a colander temporarily, and you're going to see the first washing, the bottom of your pot or your big, big bowl is going to be full of sand. So pour that out, rinse out the pot or the bowl, and do this all over again. And then, in fact, do it a third time. Most of the time, the spinach that I buy, which even in the supermarket, if it's the kind that crowns, and you're buying whole crowns of it, is undoubtedly going to have some sand clinging to it. So three washings is usually enough. Sometimes I'll actually do a fourth if I feel like I've seen a grain of sand after the third washing. I'm a little cautious because I hate biting into the sandy spinach. Not that it's going to hurt you, but it's not very pleasant. And I do it at least three times. And then I let it sit in the colander for a while. In fact, yesterday I had so much spinach, I needed two colanders to accommodate all this spinach. And I let it sit for a few minutes in the colander, not cooking it immediately, because it gives a chance for some of the excess water that's clinging to those leaves to drip off, to evaporate a little bit, maybe even. So once the spinach has been washed, and soaked in cold water, it's going to be really crisp, and have plenty of water clinging to it. So then here's my new method. You know, in the old days, we used to say, put it in a pot, cover the pot, put it over medium heat, and when the spinach is wilted down, it's done. However, I don't know where I heard this, but somebody a few years ago said, why do you cover the pot? If you're looking to evaporate water from the spinach, why not just leave the pot open? So I do that. I put the pot over a reasonably high heat, over a burner that's not going to lap up the sides of the pot, just stay on the bottom. And I use my big tongs, and I turn the spinach every couple minutes until it's all wilted down. You're going to see, even letting it stand a while to drain, a lot of water is going to accumulate, and you don't want to eat that. The water is bitter. It's full of iron, too, by the way. If you're low in iron, you might want to drink it or put it into a smoothie or something. But I toss it. And that's it. That's the wilted spinach. It only takes a few minutes, even for this vast quantity that I made yesterday, which resulted in, after steaming and draining and pushing out the water, the excess water, I still ended up, I didn't measure it, but I'm guessing it's at least 2 cups, probably more, maybe more like 2.5 to 3 cups, of cooked wilted spinach. Now, you can do anything. My go-to way with spinach is to then put it in a skillet, a wide skillet, so that it's not all on top of each other, but spread out, which induces more evaporation. In a skillet in which I've cooked some garlic, gently, not high, gently, in good olive oil, and until the garlic is tender, not colored, and then I put in the spinach, and using my wooden forks, I break up the spinach. I mean, if you don't have a wooden fork, you can use a regular fork if it's not a nonstick pan. Nonstick pan, you don't want to scratch it up with a metal fork. But you can use spoons, of course, wooden spoons, and break it all up. You can chop it if you like, but I like it leafy. And usually the leaves are not all that big after they've been cooked anyway, so it's not hard to eat. And I gently sauté the spinach in the olive oil with the garlic. You can leave the garlic. I smash the garlic with the heel of my hand and let it cook in the oil until it's soft. And then I sometimes just leave it in there because I like garlic. But if you don't want to eat a piece of garlic, as I'm sure Jill does not, take the garlic out. You'll just have this whiff of garlic. And if you like hot pepper, here's a great use for it. Add some hot pepper flakes to your garlic oil and toss the spinach in it and salt. You may need some salt. And that's it. That's the whole. And let it cook 10 minutes or so. The garlic will pick up the flavor of the oil and the garlic. The spinach will pick up the flavor of the garlic and the oil and the hot pepper, if you like. And you can eat that hot or at room temperature, but it's a great vegetable with any kind of grilled meat. You could mix it with pasta.
Or sausage.
If you're not chopping it, then you want a big pasta. If you're chopping it, you can use a fine, long pasta like spaghetti. And it's a great dish, just oil and spinach and garlic and pasta.
Would you like to know my poor man's version of that? That I do, I don't know.
Poor man, but you're a rich girl.
Ha! But I do it. So far, I think I am up to my 30th day in a row.
Of.
Unlike you, I am lazy, so I just take the washed spinach.
Yeah.
I dump it in a cast iron pan. I put a little, hear me, I put a little water in the pan. I do this while I'm feeding the dogs. And I shove it in a 400-degree oven until it wilts. I pull it, so then I feed the dog. I pull it out of the oven. I squeeze out the water. I let it cool while I put the dog outside for treats. I dump some olive oil and some salt on it, stick it back in the oven. I spread it out, stick it back in the oven, and then I crisp it up. And it's just like, again,
I'll have to try that sometime.
I'm on day
I don't have to feed the dogs in between.
No, it's really fast.
I could do something else.
The critical thing, though, is you have to squeeze all the moisture out of it.
When?
After you've wilted it.
After the initial
wilting. After the initial wilting, which really, if you've got a warm oven, doesn't take more than 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, that is, and you're using...
I'm using
pre-washed,
quote, baby spinach. Pre-washed spinach because I am lazy.
Yeah. Well, it does taste better if you use
sure.
Crinkly. It's called Savoy spinach. I looked this up this morning, and there are way too many cultivars and types for me to enumerate in just this radio
cultivar.
Program.
No, I know.
And I don't know that much about the different varieties to even do that. But I do know that, in general, we call the crown-forming spinach with the crinkly leaves, where all that sand gets embedded,
right.
Savoy, S-A-V-O-Y. And I don't know what you call the other one. But the other one, which is the smaller leaf, flat, not crinkly, that you mostly buy in boxes pre-washed, it's okay. And it's certainly okay for a salad. But it doesn't have the intensity of flavor that Savoy spinach does. And, of course, nowadays you can buy spinach all year long. But in the old days, before hydroponic greenhouse farming, spinach was an outdoor plant only. And, in fact, this time of the year was the perfect time to eat it. So moving on to strawberries, I'm not sure what you do with strawberries other than just eat them at this time of the year. I don't eat strawberries other times of the year because they are invariably hard and sour. But this time of the year, I picked one off the farm stand's counter, and it was so sweet and so fragrant, I could not resist. $6 a quart was not a crazy price either. So I bought a quart, and I'm down to my last few strawberries because all I've been doing is eating them out of hand. And yesterday I put them in my breakfast cereal. I don't usually eat breakfast cereal, but it sounded good to me yesterday morning. So I did, and it was good. So I'm going to do it again today and use up these strawberries because local strawberries, no matter what the locale, the varieties used are very, very tender and susceptible to mold. So why cultivated strawberries that we buy from California and Florida are not, I don't know. But I do know that you have to eat local strawberries within a couple of days of purchasing them. And don't wash them
until
you're ready to eat them, because water will speed up the deterioration. So don't take them home, put them under the water, drain them, even put them in the refrigerator. You've totally ruined your strawberries.
Unless you're going to...
Yeah,
no, you're absolutely right. I've seen more people, unless you are going to sort of mush them up and make a fool or something.
Well, even then I wouldn't refrigerate.
Oh God, no! But
No, but you're going to wash them. Yeah, if you're going
to
do that.
You're going to have
to. By the way, I may seek out some strawberries. But this, by the way, the strawberries that I bought were the first strawberries. May, usually strawberries don't start ripening until June or so. I was at my nephew's just last week, and he has a strawberry patch in the backyard, and my little nieces had to point out that they were full of berries, but all the berries were still white. None of the berries were ready to eat. So, and that's in Philly, which is at least 10 days to 2 weeks ahead of New York in growing season, and you guys are at least 2 weeks behind New York. So, and I think the strawberries that I bought were from southern New Jersey, Philly area. So I would say that you're not going to see a local Connecticut strawberry for at least another 3 weeks. But that'll be good. You can go pick strawberries. And the one thing I do with them, other than just eat them that way, because they're so good when at this time of the year, is I do make a strawberry liqueur. And I haven't done it in a few years because I haven't found strawberries worthy of putting up. But, or you can make strawberry. I used to make wonderful refrigerator strawberry jam. I mean, the kind of jam that you don't put up in your pantry, the kind you put in the refrigerator and you eat within a few weeks of its preparation. And you can, you know, and usually mine is, you can add a little pectin or add an apple to add pectin, but I don't bother with that. So my strawberry jam is more like strawberry sauce than strawberry jam. And I also don't like to cook them too long. I could cook them down, I guess, but I think that changes the flavor. But strawberry liqueur is super duper easy. You wash your strawberries, you cut out the core and green. A little, I don't even know what you call that part.
The leaves or the little stem?
Yeah, the leaves, but they're not really leaves.
The
whatever they are, you don't want to eat them.
Right.
So I take a little paring knife and I cut that out, and I put all the whole strawberries in a jar or a decanter, and I cover them with grain alcohol. What's it called? The kind that I buy. Everclear. Which is 90-some-odd proof alcohol, drinkable alcohol. If you don't want to go out and buy that, which is, by the way, every liquor store has it these days, I guess you could use vodka, a colorless, flavorless form of alcohol. The higher the proof, the better. And you cover them with alcohol and let them sit for, I don't know, just a couple days, and you're going to see the alcohol turns red, gorgeous red. And at that point, you can add to your taste simple syrup. meaning half water, half sugar, cup for cup, not weight for weight, but volume for volume, equal amounts, and bring it to a boil on top of the stove, and stirring it. And as soon as the mixture becomes crystal clear, which it will, as soon as it sort of begins simmering, you take it off the heat and let it cool. And then you can add sugar syrup to your strawberry alcohol, and it's delicious. And I would not let this sit forever. I have, and it was a mistake. Because it does oxidize, even under alcohol. It will change flavor, and not for the better. I've drunk it anyway, but it is best when more or less freshly made. Well, let's say it'll be good until the fall, at least, or even until Christmas. But I wouldn't push it beyond that. It may be so delicious that you won't be able to resist it. By the way, you don't need to crush strawberries, but if you want to do this with raspberries or blackberries, which I have done too, and you can mix these berries together, then you want to crush them a little bit before you add them to the alcohol. And in that case, you may want to strain out the crushed berries after a few days. You're going to have this beautifully flavored alcohol, and then you add your sugar syrup. And, if nothing else, it looks great on the sideboard. A decanter of this stuff. But I now, in my rearranged library/dining room, I now have a bar just with my bottles of homemade liqueur. I love making liqueurs. It's so easy and so rewarding in both the drinking and the looking, and people saying, oh, you made this yourself?
How long do they last?
What?
The liqueurs.
As I said, these berry liqueurs, although, in theory they're fine next year, I think they should be consumed within 6 months or so.
I'm just wondering if you could make Christmas presents or Hanukkah presents.
Yeah, you could. You could make Christmas presents.
Okay.
Now, here's an example. I also make a liqueur called Vicciolino, which is made, I have to wait now a few weeks before I can make this, because it is made with just the leaves of sour cherry trees. And I have a farmer who comes to my local green market who grows sour cherries up the river. Actually, it's halfway between you and me. And I'm sure there are growers in Connecticut who grow sour cherries. What you want is the new growth leaves from the sour cherry trees, the ones that are they're fully developed by second week in June, usually, third week in June. And I'm forgetting how many leaves, but I think it's actually for a liter of red wine, you need 32 leaves. That's a few ounces of leaves. And you put the leaves in a jar, cover them with red wine, and it doesn't have to be great red wine. I use a modest $10 bottle of red wine from Italy, sort of like anything sort of fruity and not old, like last year's vintage is what you're looking for. And you cover them with the red wine, and you let them sit for a week. And then you add alcohol and sugar syrup. And Vicciolino is... Actually, I have friends in Italy who will tell you it's something other than what I just described. But the root vish, I guess it's V-I-S-C, is, I'm not even sure what language it is, but it's in many languages. It's a root that's used to denote sour cherries. And I'm going to look up my actual proportions now. V-I-S-C, yeah. And in Italian, it comes out as... When I was a kid, we used to drink a spirit called Vishniac.
Right.
You remember that?
Yes.
Vishniac? It was a sour cherry spirit.
And they're different... is there only one name for... Is it only Vishniac, or are there other names in other...
You know, there probably are, like, but I don't know them.
Like VL.
By the way, so I was wrong about the number of leaves. I used 200 sour cherry leaves for 2 liters of red wine. So that's 4 ounces of sour cherry leaves. You should rinse them off in cold water. And then put them under for at least 2 days, but I think even a little bit more is good. It's amazing that these sour cherry leaves, I chewed on one once, and it tasted like nothing but a leaf. But once you put them in red wine, in alcohol, even mild alcohol like in red wine, they somehow make the wine taste like cherries. So they really are adding cherry flavor to the red wine. And then you add, for 2 liters of red wine, 200 sour cherry leaves, you add a half a liter of grain alcohol. That would be a pint of grain alcohol, and then you stir in the sugar, 750 grams of sugar. I don't use sugar syrup here. I'm reading my own recipe. You do have to stir it for quite a while, I mean several minutes, before the sugar is fully dissolved. And then look back in a few minutes, and if it isn't fully dissolved, you'll see it's some bit precipitating to the bottom. Stir it again. And then let it stand a few more days. A month of aging is sort of great if you can resist. Now, here's the deal, though. I had made a very large quantity of this a few years ago, and I just discovered my last bottle of that batch the other day. And, well, of course, I needed to taste it. And it had developed. It still had a nice cherry flavor, but it had developed other nuances. So I'm thinking, even though it may be some of those nuances, maybe oxidation, I'm thinking that, you know, if you have a place to put this away for a while, out of sight, you won't drink it, you may end up with something really wonderful after a couple of years. I've never let it, this is the first time I've let it go that long, because usually we drink it up. And that's definitely, by the way, worth making for Christmas. I mean, if you make them now for Christmas, and by the way, you can buy really nice bottles these days, too, so a nice bottle with Vicholino in it. I would love that as a Christmas gift myself. By the way, the wine that I use is Montepulciano d'Abruzzo, which is a fruity young wine, medium-bodied, and I pay about $10 a bottle. So with my free leaves and the small amounts of sugar and alcohol, this will make at least 2 bottles worth. And, well, you know, so under $10 a bottle.
That's pretty good for your Christmas list, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So I would do that. And I have beautiful labels that I put on my bottles, too. I've done this, by the way, given it as a gift, not necessarily for Christmas.
All right.
Well, so spinach, look out for spinach. It's coming any second.
Okay.
And strawberries, we go pick them.
And they're called stems, right?
Strawberries. Where did I go pick strawberries?
Ellsworth Hill
Sharon.
Farm. Ellsworth Hill Farm.
That's it, Ellsworth. They still have your own cherry picking?
They've got cherry picking. They got raspberry picking. They got when the seasons come, they're picking.
All right, well, maybe you should alert me to the season when it starts picking season. I may take a drive up and pick.
I'll tell you what. You take a drive up and pick, and I'll take you out to lunch.
Perfect.
All right?
Perfect.
I'll let you know when the
signs go
up.
Sometime in mid-late June, I'm sure.
I'll let you know when the signs go up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
And ask around about sour cherry leaves.
Okay. All right. Can do that, too. Why not? Somebody in the Hudson Valley must have them, for sure.
Talk to you next week.
All right.
All right. Take care. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Of course, you're going to hear Arthur Monday mornings live, rebroadcast on the weekends, and also during the week here on Robin Hood Radio. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef with 2 beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.